This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Welcome to the Samelnikan Life. I'm Poppy.
And I'm Beata.
And this is the podcast that nobody asked for, but everybody needs.
As always, before beginning the episode, we would like to acknowledge that this podcast is written and recorded on unceded and unsurrendered Algonquin territory. To support the local Indigenous community, please consider donating to organizations who are providing essential care. Examples are the Ottawa Native Friendship Center, Wabano, and Minwashan Lodge.
And since a lot of people have been thinking about police abolition recently, I think it's also maybe a good thing to point out that the Ottawa Native Friendship Center does offer like support for people who have to go to the criminal court, but also traditional Indigenous like community oriented justice programs. So I would definitely, if you've been looking at funding some community justice programs that don't require police intervention, I would definitely recommend donating to the Ottawa Native Friendship Center, because what they're doing is cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. So we're going to start off with, Poppy, what are you drinking?
Oh man, I'm going to crack it into the mic again. Oh, that was good. Okay, I'm drinking Beyond the Pale Pink Fuzz. It's one of my favorite beers. Ooh. It's just good. It's got good. Like, oh my god, I just spilled it on my laptop. Okay, what are you drinking?
I am once again drinking Barriade, because as I said in the last episode, that's really all the beer that's at my house. It's pretty good.
I love that for you. Okay, and then I'm introducing a new thing, which is we're going to take a brief moment, because I think everybody right now is reading a lot and listening to things a lot. So we're going to briefly touch on what we've learned recently. So I feel like that's a good thing to do. So Beata, what have you learned recently?
I've learned a lot, and a lot of it has been kind of expanding on what I like knew a little bit about, but not that much. I watched the documentary 13th recently and learned a lot about the history of the prison system in the States. It's a really, really good documentary. Like, I know everyone's recommending it right now, but you really do have to see it. And I've learned a lot about defunding and abolishing the police, which is, like, a thing that I kept hearing about in activist circles, like, a thing that people would say, and I was like, yeah, cool, sounds like a good long-term plan, don't think we can do it, but, like, so I support this, and it's only recently that I've started to, like, understand exactly what that means, and that it's not as radical an idea as I thought it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been interesting. I've also... I did a bit of research for a Five Thoughts piece on Silver Seven, where I kind of talked about, like, race in hockey, and learned a lot about the history of black players in the NHL. I learned that the first players to use the slap shot and the butterfly goalie style were both in the, I believe it was called the Colored Hockey League, which was a league of black players.
They invented the slap shot?
Yeah.
That's fucking cool. I did not know that that's
from the Black Hockey League. I know, right? I didn't know this either. It's really cool. Anyways, there's a bunch of, like, fun facts. I have a bunch of links in my Five Thoughts piece that I might, like, tweet out again.
Yeah, we should add that piece to the show notes as well, just in case. Yeah, that sounds really good. Okay, I learned, first of all, I learned that you can listen to a lot of Angela Davis's speeches and interviews on Spotify, which I didn't know. So I've started listening to her a lot. She's got a very, like, I feel like we're all reading a lot, and I feel like it can be really hard to read a lot all the time. I like the aspect of being able to listen to things. That's why I listen to a lot of podcasts as well. So I've been listening to a lot of Angela Davis interviews and speeches that she's held, like, either while I'm on my walk or doing the dishes or whatever.
That's
which
nice.
Has been really nice. So yeah, that was cool. I learned, so I used to volunteer with an organization that was like, it was like a pen pal thing for LGBTQ prisoners. So that organization was an abolitionist organization at its core. Like, one of its core values was prison abolition. And so I knew some stuff about prison abolition, but despite the fact that I'm supposed to be a big brains university graduate, I'd never truly, like, considered a complete, like, police and prison abolition system, like, that being connected, which makes no sense. In retrospect,
right?
Like, I clearly was just skimming the surface.
But no, that's what it was like for me, too.
So, that was really cool. Like you, I've been learning a lot about police abolition and that it's actually, like, a thing and that police didn't always exist and there are alternate forms of justice. I've been kind of trying to find out about different, like, collaborative justice programs around the city and stuff because I find that interesting. So that's cool. Because of listening to a lot of Angela Davis stuff, I'm learning about how, in some cases, the police kind of manufacture crime. And I feel very much like this is a good point where I'm like, oh, I actually don't know a lot of stuff. Like, I feel like you spend so much time reading in university and you're like, wow, my brain is full of all this stuff. And now that I've graduated, I'm like, actually, I'm more aware of how little I know.
Well, I feel like school makes you aware of how little you know because you learn so much all the time that, you know, I feel like after every time I have, like, a really, really good class where I really feel like I learned a lot, I leave that being almost afraid, being like, wow, I really didn't know any of this stuff before. Now I can't believe that I didn't know that. And, like, think of all the classes offered at this university that are, you know, offering life-changing information that I won't get the chance to learn, right?
Yeah, and I think the internet is really great for that because it is really making information so much more accessible. Mm-hmm. And, like, a lot of what I've been reading and listening to and stuff is open source. So that's really cool. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's just a constant learning curve, but... Oh, and then I'm learning about, like, terminology. I admit that up until recently, I did not know that when you write, like, white people or black community, I guess you don't really say white community, but you know what I mean? Like, you capitalize the letters. You capitalize the B in black. I didn't know that before, but it, in retrospect, makes perfect sense because I took a lot of Indigenous studies class and you always capitalize the I in Indigenous. So it makes perfect sense the same way that you would capitalize the first letter in, like, someone's nationality or whatever. So that's something. And then, of course, the terminology around using the term enslaved instead of slave.
Yes. I've been guilty of using the wrong terminology as well when talking about my problematic ancestors and stuff.
Yeah, totally. And like,
like,
to use the term enslaver instead of master. I think that's interesting. And then, like, we had some interesting, like, I don't know, conversations recently just among friends and stuff that have been quite eye-opening. I think that all of it is, like, I think it's a good opportunity for all of us to just admit that we don't know shit.
Yeah, definitely.
And kind of, you know, build on that. And I think that's been good because I think that a lot of us, especially as young people and especially as young left-leaning people, sometimes we need to be, like, humbled a little bit.
For sure.
So this has been a, for us at least, good humbling experience.
Definitely.
So after speaking about how, like, this has been a humbling experience, I'm now going to continue with my podcast where I spout my opinions.
Sounds good. I mean, we're gonna talk a little bit about the Sens right now.
Yeah.
And specifically how they responded to what's happening around the world, because holy shit, it wasn't good.
Actually, yeah, I want to pull up the statement.
I have it right here. Oh my God. I pulled it up for this. So, the Ottawa Senators were one of the last teams to release a statement regarding the, you know, Black Lives Matter and everything that's happening in the States. I think they were the second last after the, before the Rangers. I might be mistaken about that. What the statement said was, "The Ottawa Senators Hockey Club strongly believes that racism and violence have no place in a civilized society," and we're going to talk about that more, and they continue, "as a professional sports organization and a major philanthropic force in the Ottawa-Gatineau community, we have a responsibility to champion the causes of inclusion and respect on and off the ice. We support efforts to create a respectful society of equal justice." So that was garbage.
Mm-hmm.
And first, the first thing that, like, jumped out to me, and I know that jumped out to Poppy as well, because we both said this, like, at the same time, is yeah. the use of the term civilized society, which, for anyone who maybe isn't aware of the problem with the word civilized, this is a super, super colonial term that has historically been used to differentiate white, well, mostly white cultures from non-white cultures. So colonialism was, a big part of it was the quote-unquote civilized societies trying to go and civilize, again in quotes, the less civilized non-white people. And so, first of all, like, yeah, like, they, it's literally a racist term that they put in their anti-racism statement. And also, I'm pretty sure civilized society invented racism, so I don't know what you're trying to say. Racism has no place in a civilized society.
Yeah, I think that people... Okay, so I think that it's important at first to look at the terminology, and obviously, instinctively, we just think, oh, civilized comes from the term civilization, which is in itself not necessarily, like, the most loaded term. As Beata, like, said, it's the history of using the term civilized versus, like, savage or uncivilized, which was used as a derogatory term and also as a reason why, like, as an excuse to invade countries and as an excuse to oppress people, because you were making people less than. And so I'm, like, really... I think the thing that really, like, gets me with this is that, I mean, for both of us, with, like, a recent university degree of any kind, you would see the term civilized society and immediately be like, yikes, 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 like, we don't use that. Like, that's drilled into you. Not just in university, but I think in, like, school in general, you get the, like, that's not something you would do. And so, to me, personally, this statement feels very much like it's not written by an actual, like, communications person.
No, and, like, what gets me is that I can understand, like, maybe in, like, high school, I might have just written civilized society without thinking, right? You know, like, you just have these phrases that you don't even really think about before you write them, so I might have written something like that, but even in high school, I probably would have looked at that and gone, I can just say, have no place in our society, right? Or in society. You don't need to add in a civilized society, right? Like, what does and that also, mean? And I feel like anyone could have caught that, right?
Also, the implication that racism has a space in any kind of society is...
And again, I don't even think they meant it that way. I think it was literally just, like, they wrote that and just didn't edit it. Like, didn't think any further, because they didn't even think... I don't think they thought critically about saying civilized society.
I think that a lot of people are putting out statements right now, and I know how difficult it is to write a statement. And I think that specifically because of that, most people are being more critical. And I also think that a person who works as a professional, like, as a communications coordinator, or anybody who works in communications, would look at this and be like, maybe we shouldn't do this. Like, maybe this isn't a great, you know, like, I know they're trying to keep it vague, but they're not doing a good job.
Mm-hmm. And also, the fact they say, like, racism and violence, and then they're like, a respectful society of equal justice, it kind of seems like the violence mm-hmm. on both sides type thing. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't say Black Lives Matter, they didn't say specifically police violence. I don't know.
No. I don't know. Eugene has big cop-loving energy, so... I mean, not to accuse anybody of having cop-loving energy, but... Eugene kind of does. I definitely think that... I mean, also, like, we're talking about a hockey organization that... I mean, the NHL in general does this, but, like, they have a whole thing about honoring people who, like, protect and serve and, like, honoring the military and stuff like that. And I don't want to, like, even start with what I think about honoring the military. Anyway, so my point is, I don't think we should be, like... I don't think we should have to stand up and clap because somebody went to Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's a really fucked up part of NHL culture. I don't think that that's okay. Mm-hmm. I don't think that there is any, like, literally, like, they're like, ooh, like, this person went and, like, fought a war that was mostly about oil. Please, like, let's honor this person. Mm-hmm. I just, I don't like that.
No, it's, I don't like it at all.
And I think that the NHL is going to continue to try and play it both ways. Like, the NHL is still very much going to mm-hmm. try and be like, ooh, respect the troops. But the thing is, everybody thinks that, like, respect the troops is like, oh, respect the people who fought in World War II. Please name a mm-hmm. war since World War II that has, like, actually been liberating to anyone.
No. No, I'm definitely not... hasn't been.
I mean, I don't want to, like... Oh god, I feel like I'm digging myself into a hole. I don't want to say that every single... I don't want to say that every single person, regardless of where they are, who has fought in some kind of military capacity is necessarily an unethical person. And I also know a lot of people are forced into it. And I also know that sometimes people resort to military force to liberate themselves. And I don't think that's bad. I think violence from, like, a population uprising and taking away the, like... Because the state, like, owns the right to violence, basically, right? I think that taking mm-hmm. that right away from the state when it's oppressing its people is completely fair and completely justified. And that counts for any kind... That counts for, like, protests that become violent. That counts for, you know, like, physical altercations to protect other people. And that counts for, you know, if your government is being violent and oppressive... militarizing yourself and having, like, militant justice groups. I'm not going to say that that's unethical, but I'm talking about, like, the Canadian and the US troops. I just
definitely
it's not something where I'm
like, I don't think that they deserve to be honored right now.
I mean, yeah, like, I don't... This is gonna be, like, a hot take on a hockey podcast. I'm, like, about to get cancelled. But, you know, like, I'm sorry.
You're so much more worried about getting cancelled than I am.
No, like, I mean, I'm not worried about it. I'm worried that people are going to misunderstand me and think that, much mm-hmm. like the Ottawa Senators probably, I'm like, all forms of violence are bad.
Right.
Not all forms of violence are bad. And I don't want to say that. And I don't want to say that, like, militant activist groups, for example, are necessarily bad. Not saying that. I'm saying that the fact that we have a culture in which every single hockey game, like, literally every single hockey game, they pull up someone and they're like, this person went to Iraq. Mm-hmm. And you have to, like, clap? That's deeply fucked up. And that also, like, I believe kind of is a symptom of this overall culture of, like, not valuing life that is deemed as quote-unquote other as much as we value the lives of, like, people who are white citizens of your own country.
Definitely.
Okay, I feel like I wrapped it up in a way that, like, actually, like, makes
that's,
sense.
That's great. No, I love that. Anyways, right after the Sens released their statement, Craig Medaglia tweeted hashtag Black Lives Matter, which I'm not gonna put words in his mouth, but that was convenient timing. And then soon after that, he announced that he was leaving the senator's organization, and again, didn't give any specific reasons for it. And, you know, I'm not gonna put words in Craig's mouth here. He might be listening to this, so hi, Craig, if you're listening. But yeah, Craig Medaglia, for anyone who is not aware, he has been awarded Big Rig Energy at least once, probably more than that. And he runs the Senator's social media accounts, and he's pretty great, and we love him. And
yeah.
It's pretty significant that he left the organization.
I think it feels... Okay, I want to go quickly. I want to say one thing first. I think the fact that members of the staff at the Ottawa Senators tweeted Black Lives Matter, but the official account did not, is an indication that somebody stopped them from doing that from the, or like, the official account.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and like, again with that statement, where it reads like something that you would write without really giving any thought to it, and then it seems like it's just completely unedited, and like, nobody who knows anything looked over it. And yet, like, I don't know, we know Craig, I don't think he would have wanted them to say that, and, you know, somebody had to translate that to French, unless, well, I don't know, it could have been the same person writing both.
Well, it was thoughtless. And the second thing I wanted to say was that I think Craig leaving feels so significant to us as a fan base, because he engaged with the fan base so much, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And I think that maybe for people, like, outside of Twitter, for example, people who don't use Twitter or people who are casual fans, this might not feel like such a momentous thing. But because it was, like, such a huge part of the experience of especially, like, quote-unquote hockey Twitter, it feels really weird. It feels like such a big deal. So I'm worried that maybe... I mean, I'm not worried. But I think that maybe, possibly, potentially... our feelings about the social media man leaving are a little bit inflated, yeah, as opposed to how I would feel about the social media man leaving of, like, literally any other organization.
That's true.
So I think that's, like, a thing that, you know, we should say for clarity. But I do think that, like, honestly, the Sens, terrible fucking hockey team, great social media presence.
I know, yeah.
It has to be said.
Yeah, Craig has done an amazing job the entire time that he's been with the organization. And, like, you know, Craig leaving isn't the same as, like, other, you know, figures of the hockey team leaving, right? It's not like players or, you know, Lyndon Sluage leaving, because Craig is still around. He's still on Twitter. We still get to be friends with him, but we do miss out on that amazing Sens content that he provides.
I don't know, Craig leaving to me feels exactly like Erik Karlsson leaving the team. I'm like, I can still watch him play, but it won't be on my team anymore. I don't know what Craig's gonna do next, but even if he, like, starts tweeting for, like, a grocery store or something, like, I'm gonna be supporting that shit. Alright. Do you want to talk about the NHL video?
Yeah. So... this was a major yikes that the NHL did. Basically, if you were not aware, obviously a bunch of NHL players put out statements about Black Lives Matter, and a few of them actually ended up showing to protests, including Tyler Seguin, which was kind of a surprise to a lot of people. I wouldn't have pegged him as, like, the first person to show up to a protest. And he wasn't, by the way, because JT Brown had already been, like, on the ground in Minnesota since day one, tweeting about it, potentially, like, putting his career at risk for all that he knew. And then Seguin showed up, and he went to a protest, and he made an Instagram post that was really nice. It was just saying, like, yep, it's been a really nice day of learning and mourning, and it just kind of seemed like he was making an effort to learn. So he did great things. No shade to him at all. But after that, the NHL put out this, like, was it, like, 3 minutes long? This, like, really long video with, like, pictures of him at the protests, pictures of his, like, Instagram picture, and comments from fans being like, wow, what an inspiration, what a great guy, I'm so happy that he's doing this. Thank you, Sege, for doing this, right?
Yeah.
And it had, like, this inspirational music in the background, and it was so tone-deaf and so bad.
See, I feel like... Okay, here's the thing. I feel like that's totally fine if... Like, I think it's fine for people to be like, okay, well, I want to talk about, I don't know, or, like, I want to comment on Sagan's post and be like, yay, thanks for, like, not being a dick.
Yeah.
I think that's fine. That's cool. I think that ignoring people like JT Brown or Anthony Duclair or PK Subban, who donated an insane amount of money... Like, Black players who actually have made these experiences and who are stepping up and talking about it and supporting protesters, like, ignoring them is, like, yikes, yikes, yikes. And I also feel bad for the people who commented and were like,
yeah,
hey, thanks for doing this, because I feel like now it looks like...
Yeah, and
the not cute.
Yeah, there was a conversation about this in the Silver 7 comments around that time, where people were kind of pointing out that, you know, it's a good thing that Sagan did this, and it's good to kind of show white people showing up to protest, and it can be inspirational. And, like, all of that is true, but you really do need to be very careful that you're not celebrating white players over Black players and kind of venerating them for doing, I mean... perhaps a bit more than the bare minimum, but still not doing that much, and not doing as much as the Black players have been doing. Like, Sagan was not putting his life on the line the way, at least not to the same extent that any black man going to a protest would be. He was not risking his career the way that, for all he knew at the time, JT Brown might have been. And just generally, it plays into this, like, white savior narrative where, you know, this idea that marginalized people need to be, well, Black people specifically need to be, like, saved by these nice white people who swoop in and give them their rights, you know? Like, that's a really problematic narrative to be kind of sharing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, okay, here's the thing. I want to call us out for a moment as well, because we, and I think everybody who is a Sens fan, is very guilty of being like, Borowiecki is so woke, and we love him, and talking about that a lot, and actually, like, probably too much. And I was thinking about it recently, and I feel like we don't do enough to highlight, for example, Anthony Duclair, who, like, I mean, it was kind of unfortunate because last time we recorded he hadn't really put anything out there or said anything, but, like, who has, like, shown up to protests, who has been very outspoken, who, like, I think also quite bravely is, like, putting themselves out there as not just a Black player, but as a Black player who's not necessarily trying to, like, sort of fade into the background or fit in.
Yeah.
And I think that's really brave. I mean, I keep bringing this up, but PK Subban and JT Brown have both been, like, vilified for just being... I mean, JT Brown has been more political, but PK Subban literally just for being, like, a Black man who enjoys having fun... has been, like, really vilified for his quote-unquote attitude. So, I think that as Sens fans, we're also really guilty of doing that. I think part of it is obviously Anthony Duclair's a new player, but that's not an excuse.
Yeah, and I think there's also a difference in expectations, right? Where with a Black player standing up for Black Lives Matter, you're kind of like, oh yeah, well, of course he would, whereas with a white player, you expect... you don't expect him to be that supportive of this movement, and so when the white players are actually speaking up, it feels like a bigger deal, because you're like, oh, I really, really didn't expect that of this guy, but as you said, like, that shouldn't change, that shouldn't mean that we are celebrating the white players more.
Yeah, you know? I think that that's, like, a big problem. I think that's a problem in a lot of social movements. It's the same way as, like, a few years ago with the Me Too movement. If a man was, like, super woke, we were like, oh my god,
yeah,
he also hates rape culture. You know what I mean? Like, I think that when we were witnessing that as women, we could call that out and we saw that. Like, I mean, I think a lot of us also maybe possibly bought into it, but mm-hmm. you know, like, we had a greater understanding of what was happening. I think right now, as white people, we're not always aware of that, and we might possibly, as I said, do the thing where we're like, oh, Borrow is, like, so cool, we love him so much, but mm-hmm. ignore other players on the team, and specifically ignoring, like, a player on the team who is black. I think that this is a really, like, uncomfortable conversation to have, but it's a conversation we have mm-hmm. to have. And I'd been thinking about it before. I was like, should I say this on the podcast? And then I was like, it's really fucked up of me not to say this.
Yeah.
Like, I think that it's important for us to be like, yo, I fucked up. I said something stupid. Or like, mm-hmm. oh, we didn't, like, dive into this deep enough. Or, you know, maybe I should have, like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like...
I know, yeah.
And I think that it's important for us right now to be like, okay, we fuck up. Like, our entire thing mm-hmm. is calling out hockey culture. We couldn't do that properly without calling out ourselves. And, like, mm-hmm. the fan base that we're a part of and the fan base that we're a part of that is very left-leaning, like, our little subsection,
mm-hmm.
We still need to hold ourselves accountable.
Definitely.
And so I think that video that the NHL put out is just a bigger symptom of that. And I definitely think it's easy to dunk on that video because it was a stupid video.
Yeah.
It was really dramatic. It was like, oh my God, this guy went to a protest. Like, went to a protest where he knew he wasn't going to get into too much trouble. You know what I mean? Like, he knew that he was going to be fine.
And he knew that he was probably going to get a lot of really positive feedback for it.
Absolutely. And we saw that video and we were like, this is cringy, eh? I mean, it's not a crime to be cringy, right? Like, it's cringy.
No.
But it's also kind of tone deaf. But when I kind of thought of that on a smaller level, like, boiled down to, like, the smaller fandoms, I was like, don't we do that with Borrow? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And we've definitely done it in other situations as well. I've definitely done it where I, you know, and like you said, it's not... Like, it's with multiple different issues, too, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I've definitely done it when I see men speaking up about sexism. I've done it when I see white people speaking up about racism. Like,
yeah,
yeah,
same
it's
with
something we need to be aware of.
I mean, straight people talking about, like, LGBTQ mm-hmm. issues. Like, you know, we're very fast to be like, oh my God, yay, thank you. And I think that it's important, and I think that it should be encouraged for people who hold privileges to educate themselves and to support causes. I mean, literally our privilege is useless if we're not using it to elevate these conversations.
Mm-hmm.
But the NHL in itself is already, like, a super tone-deaf organization, is in itself, like, a very racist organization, like, inherently
yeah.
racist, and inherently, like, really into the prison industrial complex. Like, the NHL
yeah.
is very much, like, respect the troops, respect the cops, like, kiss their mm-hmm. boots. So I think the fact that they chose a white person and were like, oh my God, look at him showing up to one protest. And mm-hmm. I also, in all fairness, have to say that Seguin probably did not ask for this.
No, probably not.
And what they did was really fucked up. Like, I
yeah.
think somebody in the NHL, in their social media, did a really stupid thing and did a very mm-hmm. like thoughtless thing.
Yeah, well, suddenly they made him look bad for, you know, showing up to the protest
yeah.
and, like, posting about it, right? And I think he only posted one thing. It wasn't like he was all over social media with his selfies at the protest saying, look at what a great person I am, you know?
No, and I think,
like,
it's important.
Sure about it.
And I think that I think that it's not bad to be like, hey, I showed up to this protest, because it shows not just to your fan base, but also to your fellow players, like, that you support this cause, that you would be someone who would defend someone in an argument, or would defend someone from, you know, being in an unsafe situation. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
I think that that's a really good message to send to your organization and your workspace as well, to be like,
mm-hmm.
I support you. But, like, when JT Brown raised his fist during the national anthem, it was like, how dare he? Like,
well, yeah, he was, like, threatened for that, wasn't he? Like, the coach said that he would bench anyone who kneeled for the anthem. He was pressured into apologizing for it, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, like, it's fucking crazy. And I think that's something we're seeing right now as well, is, like, after all of what's happening now, And I think this is kind of like a cool symptom of how right now we're really shifting into a new normal in our discourse. Like, people who have never in their lives considered police abolition or even police reform are suddenly like, yo, I love this. Like, I'm down with this. People who've never maybe thought about race relations and, you know, the struggle that Black people in particular go through are now seeing firsthand, like, how much pain and trauma and violence is being endured. And it's creating a sort of shift in perception and public perception and in public political alignment. And I think that that's really amazing. And because of that, now suddenly everybody's like, oh my God, when Kaepernick, like, kneeled for the anthem, that was so great. That was so cool. Everybody who formerly was like, oh my God, so disrespectful, even though he said he was protesting police violence.
Yeah. And it is frustrating to kind of see that now, where, like, it's so, like, obviously it's so nice to see people finally saying, hey, maybe Kaepernick was right, or players putting out statements that include the terms white privilege, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's nice, but at the same time, you're like, where have you been this whole time? Like, why is it just now that you're understanding this?
Yeah.
You know, like, why weren't you on Kaepernick's side at the beginning? Why didn't you try to, like, understand what he was talking about?
Yeah, I think that, and I've had this conversation with a few people recently where people have been like, they literally didn't know. Like, they literally didn't realize how bad it was. And I think that that is true. I think that there's a blind spot. I think that it's really hard for us, every time something like this happens, maybe on, like, a more, like, Ontario level, like, after Abdi was killed in Ottawa by policemen, like, there was this sudden, like, realization, I think, in the city, because Canadians like to be like, oh, we're so nice, we don't have a violence problem. But it was, like, in broad daylight and filmed, so everybody was like, oh, shit. Or, like, now with Regis Paquette being murdered, or, like, well, mysteriously falling out of a window after the police showed up.
Yeah.
Or, like, someone really, really recently was beaten up by a bylaw officer here in Ottawa because he was in a park with his child during, like, social distancing measures, and the guy was like, I want to write you, like, you know, you're gonna get a fine, and he was like, why is nobody else getting a fine? You know what I mean? Like, that's crazy shit, and I think maybe a lot of people, especially white people, especially privileged people, just haven't been aware of it, and the media doesn't pick this up very often. So if you're not tuned in specifically to these things, you might never really, like, consider it. But that being said, I think it's also showing us that we need to listen to people of color, and specifically Black people and Indigenous people, so much more.
Yeah, like, definitely.
Like, we should have listened, or we should have paid attention when Colin Kaepernick knelt for the anthem. And that was a really powerful thing he did, and, like, I still think that that was amazing. I thought it was cool at the time. I still think it was a really, really important and good thing to do, and it really got people talking. These things get people talking. JT Brown raising his fist during the anthem, like, got people talking. We should have been having these conversations so much more, and I think that the NHL should honestly apologize for the way that they treated JT Brown.
Oh, absolutely.
The NFL should apologize for the way they treated Colin Kaepernick. Because now they're putting out all these statements being like, oh, we totally support people, but you're not supporting your own players.
Yeah, and even, I want to extend that a little bit to the hockey media. Because I follow a lot of women of color, especially, who have been trying to have these conversations in the hockey media for a very long time, and who have been pushed out and harassed and told that, you know, these conversations do not have a place in hockey, that they shouldn't be talking about this, to now see those same media outlets publishing pieces by white guys being like, racism is a thing, isn't it? Colin Kaepernick, who knew, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's really, really important for media outlets to look at the way that they've treated people of color, especially women of color, in the past, and make an effort, like, make sure that that doesn't happen again. Make sure that they are continuing to hire people who are going to talk about politics and sports, who are going to talk about race, and just generally people of color, and women of color especially, who are going to just write about sports, because you need to have a more diverse newsroom, and you need to let these people talk about what they want to talk about and actually listen to them.
That, and also I think that, like, right now a lot of media outlets seem to be scrambling to find, like, you know, like, a black freelancer who will write for them.
But, like, you could have found someone months ago. I guarantee that.
You could have.
You could have had someone the whole time.
A, you should have had someone on staff. Like, you should have a more diverse staff. You shouldn't have to scramble for this. And B, don't just hire black writers when there's, like, a spike of talking about race. Like, this is, like, and I keep saying this, this is, like, a kind of weird, kind of uncomfortable, kind of, like, sometimes feels like maybe you're stepping on, like, weird ground conversation for us to have as white people, because, as I've, like, said at the beginning, we're constantly, like, trying to figure this out, and we're still making mistakes and still learning. But on the other hand, if we don't talk about it, and especially, like, okay, look, the Silver Sevens podcasts are all white, okay?
Yeah. And also, the Silver Seven writing staff, we don't have a single black person on staff. And, like, it's not all white, thankfully, but, like, it's mostly white.
And I think that has two reasons. One of them is that sports and sports media creates a hostile environment for people of color. And the other is that culturally, we don't allow people of color into sports environments very often. You know what I mean? Like, sports can be, especially hockey, can be both very inclusive. It can create, like, a situation where people come together no matter who they are. But it can also create a situation where people are bullied out of liking a sport because they don't fit in.
Yeah, and I'd even say, like, often when I tell people that I write for a hockey blog, one of the first things they'll ask me is, oh my god, don't you get a lot of hate? Like, I could never do that. That's such a hostile environment. Like, even people who aren't hockey fans will immediately just be like, oh my god, hockey, not a space for me. Or even sometimes white men will be like, oh, yikes, you must have a hard time in hockey fandom, right? Like, it's well known that this isn't a welcoming space to people who are not white and who are not male.
Absolutely. Like, I completely agree with you. It's, like, a running joke among everyone I know that I'm, like, my dirty secret is that I, like hockey. because, and again, like, we hold privilege as white women, and we hold privilege as cis people, where, like, we don't, like, we have already experienced some, like, weird shit. I mean, we literally, like, became friends because we were being cyberbullied. Or, like, because we
can't. Story.
We got into, like, a really, like, weird and uncomfortable and bad conversation online, and we're, like, being bullied. But we're still white, we're still cis, and so, like, if it's so uncomfortable a lot of the time for white cis women, I cannot imagine, or I can barely imagine, what it would be like for a person of color, or a person, or a trans person, or a, like, you know, just, like, anybody who doesn't really fit the mold. a gay for sure. Man, like, that's, like, you know, like, hockey loves to, like, dunk on gay men, which is really horrific. And we see this all the time. We see microaggressions all the time. And I think that that's why, like, now every media outlet is scrambling to find someone to write for them, especially in sports. Because it's like, yeah, you literally are part of a system, and I guess we, by extension, are part of a system where diverse voices aren't necessarily supported. And that's, like, it creates a really fucked up uneven ground, and it also creates a fucked up uneven ground where black sports writers are specifically, like, getting a lot of requests, like, every couple of years when these things come up, and then, or, like, when these things come into the mainstream media. I'm not gonna say when they come up, because they're constantly happening. And then they're only being invited to talk about race relations. Nothing else. Yeah. There's no opportunity to establish yourself as a sports writer in any other way. Or as a writer in any other way, let's mm-hmm. be honest. Like, I'm sure that I know that this, like, goes beyond just sports. Like, journalism in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And actually, on that note, I'm gonna recommend a cool thing that is happening this Saturday on the 20th, so probably the day after this podcast comes out, hopefully, by the Black Girl Hockey Club, which is a group that is basically working to make hockey a more inclusive space and talking about racial justice in hockey. They're doing an event for Juneteenth, for the June 19th, celebrating, well, June 19th is the anniversary of the end of slavery in the States, and so the Black Girl Hockey Club is doing a panel with a bunch of Black hockey players and people in hockey media, just talking about race in hockey, and I will tweet out a link and put it in the show notes and stuff, but I would highly recommend grabbing a free ticket for that.
Yeah, that's amazing. Black Girl Hockey Club is also just doing, like, incredible shit.
Yeah, follow them. They're amazing.
They're amazing, like... And also June 20th, if you're in Ottawa, there is a vigil for Abdi Rahman Abdi. It's going to start outside the police station on Elgin. It's been, I think, 4 years now, and we still have the person who killed the police officer who beat Abdi Rahman Abdi to death in Westboro, in Ottawa, in front of people in broad daylight, is still getting a check from us, like, from people in Ottawa paying taxes. He's still being paid. We still have no justice. So if you're in Ottawa and you're able to, obviously if you're sick, don't go. I would absolutely recommend showing up. It's important for us to really put pressure on the city right now. I know the mayor's getting a lot of emails and it's really making him mad, so kind of keep going. Email your MPP. And look up who is on the board that determines police funding, because you can email all of them and all of their emails are online. Just a fun fact. Also, templates are great, but if you use just the template, it can go through a filter and they'll just filter it right out of their email system. So if you want to use a template, customize it. That's my other tip.
All right.
Okay.
That went on for a while. Okay.
Now.
It's time for the mascot minute.
Yeah.
If you don't like the mascot minute, skip ahead 1 minute until the ad. But if you're into that, keep listening, obviously.
Okay. Let's go. Spotcat couldn't even remember how much time he'd spent in lockdown in Bailey's house. Months into the pandemic, the two mascots were finally learning to coexist. They had established a routine and even divided up household chores so they never had to argue about them. Bailey was a good roommate. He was tidy and responsible, and he didn't snore like Gritty did. Though Sparty's body ached for his former lover, he had to admit that Bailey was so much easier to live with than Gritty had been. He was about to seek out Bailey when he received a text from a number he'd never wanted to hear from again.
"Hey, Sparty," read the text from Carlton the Bear. "I've got 8 other mascots coming to my house to quarantine. Want to be the 10th member of our bubble?" Spartacat sighed. "Thanks, Carlton, but I'm still in LA," he wrote back, grateful for a good excuse to reject an invitation to another of Carlton's legendary ragers. 10 mascots in one house could only mean trouble. Carlton's answering text arrived immediately. "Just get your team to send their private jet," Spartacat groaned. Carlton was always rubbing his team's wealth in Sparty's face. "My team doesn't have a private jet," he wrote back angrily. "Oh, right," typed Carlton. "I forgot your team is poor. No worries. I'll send the Leafs jet right away. Pick you up in 5 hours? The next text came in just as Sparty was trying to figure out what to say. "Oh, and don't worry. Gritty won't be there. What he did to us was wrong. We don't lie about hookups in Ontario."
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I love we don't lie about hookups in Ontario, not to, like, praise my own line. It was pretty funny. Also untrue, but, like...
I think Poppy originally wrote something about, like, how, oh, what he did to us was wrong, and I just commented, Carlson says, as he organizes an orgy with 10 mascots.
Okay, but that's honest. I appreciate his honesty. It's true. Like, you know, when you're inviting 10 mascots to live together, that's like, you know what's gonna happen. At least he's being honest about it. He's not going behind anyone's back. Gritty was being disrespectful, and I don't like to say this often. Gritty was being disrespectful by not telling Spotty Cat, like, the boundaries of their relationship, or the lack of boundaries of their relationship. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I'm on Spotty's side here. I'm usually...
Oh, me too.
I mean, I'm always Team Spotty, let's be honest.
Shout out to Sparty. Remember when we met him and he knew who we were?
God, I think every day about, does Spotty Cat still listen? Or has Spotty Cat listened? Has the person inside Spotty Cat listened to our podcast? Or have they just, like, heard about it?
I know that the person inside the Spartacat costume is aware of the podcast, because I know someone who knows Spartacat and said that they would tell him about it.
Mm.
So I know that he's aware of it, and, like, we saw how he reacted to meeting us. Like, he very obviously knew exactly what was happening. He knows exactly what we say about him, or write about him on this podcast.
But I feel we've gone so many places with Spotty, and I'm like, does the person inside Spotty Cat know? Like, do they know they're in LA right now?
I don't know.
I love to think about this a lot. Like, I'm not even kidding. It's one of my favorite things.
Day.
One day, oh my god, if you're the person inside Spotty Cat,
oh my god, email us?
thisamelnickandlife@gmail.com. We will not tell a soul if you don't
we
want us to.
We just want to know for ourselves.
Just be like, hey, I'm the person inside Spotty Cat, and I know what's going on. And maybe, possibly, potentially tell us a little bit about, like, life as a mascot, because that's really funny.
Oh, for sure. Are there 10 mascot bubbles happening?
I mean, are you friends with other mascots? Like, you have to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like when you go to play other teams, do you get to meet the other mascots and, like, hit it off the way we think they do? I have so many questions. Please email us. You don't have to answer any questions. Just say hi.
Yeah.
Okay.
We just want to say hi to you.
So, the NHL did a thing that they should have done a while ago.
Yeah. I don't think it was even an NHL thing, though. Was it? It was just a bunch of players.
Really? I thought it was an NHL thing.
I'm not sure. Anyways, a whole bunch of Black players decided to form the Hockey Diversity Alliance. And basically the goal of it was just to eliminate... Well, just... The goal of the alliance is to help eliminate racism in hockey in general. It didn't even say, like, in the NHL. It's in hockey. The whole statement looked really cool. I think it was Evander Kane, Joel Ward, Wayne Simmons, like, there were, and Akeem Elieu as well. There were a few, like, current and former NHLers all involved in it.
I just wanted to jump in real quick. It is operating independently from the NHL,
mm-hmm.
but the Kim Davis, who's the league's senior vice president of social impact, growth initiatives, and legislative affairs, has said that she really wants to work together, like, her position as the NHL and the alliance She really wants to get them together.
It's really good that there's an organization that's kind of within the NHL that's actually talking about this. Like, that feels like a huge step forward. A few people did point out that, well, one, JT Brown wasn't involved in it, which is a little bit weird, but, like, I don't know the reasons for that. So I'm not going to, like, speculate too much on why he wasn't involved. We're just going to have to see what this alliance ends up doing. And the other thing is that they said that it was about eliminating racism in hockey, but there were no black women involved, even though, like, Blake Bolden and Soraya Tinker have both been very outspoken about racial justice, so they seem like obvious additions, and, like, I think I read, I couldn't find it, but I feel like there were rumors somewhere that they were looking, they were talking about including them in the alliance.
Yeah.
So I hope that they do.
I mean, so right now it's just current and former NHL players. So it's Evander Kane and Akeem Aliyu as co-heads. And then the executive committee is Trevor Daley, Matt Dumba, Wayne Simmonds, Chris Stewart, and Joel Ward. And so right now we're just looking at, like, people within the NHL, and it kind of has, it's early days, so it looks like they're still going to be expanding. And I hope they do. And also, like, you never know what's going on. It's possible that, you know, JT Brown was like, I don't want to join this alliance. Like, that's on him. Like, if he decided to, that he wants to act differently or, like, organize differently, that's fine. People don't have to always agree on the same things, right? So it's kind of early days, but it's, I think, a really good starting point. I think that it's some people who have some pretty good footing within the NHL. And I think the fact that Kim Davis is very positive about it has, like, I don't know, it shows some promise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Like, I'm really excited to see what they end up doing. Like, we haven't really seen much from them, but this sounds like a good idea, and I'm just looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think it's good. I think it's a good, like, start. I would like to see more of this kind of, like, outside of the NHL operating, but involved in the NHL organization, because I think, as we've seen in many cases, I mean, I think that, obviously, Kim Davis is cool and lit, and, like, also is a black woman, so obviously she's probably, like, very much into this. But I think that when we give just the NHL the role of kind of organizing groups that are supposed to police the NHL, that's not gonna work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you need groups that are at least a little bit outside of the NHL. You cannot be policing yourself. That doesn't always work. And so I feel like this is a really good idea. I hope that they manage to build some momentum and have a good collaboration going on. I hope that they manage to expand. It would be really cool if they managed to expand and also have influence within the NWHL, for example.
Definitely.
I would love for them to, or I would love for an organization at least to be more involved in, like, the AHL and the OHL. That would be nice. Mm-hmm. Because, like, as we heard from Aliyu, like, these things start in the minor leagues. They don't
definitely
just happen in the NHL. So that's really cool. I think it's a really good initiative. I'm excited to see what they come up with.
Yeah, and moving on, there was something you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I feel like we frequently talk about players' individual actions, players' ability to use their voices, and I think I said last week that, or the week before, I don't know, last episode, I said last episode that sometimes it feels so useless to talk about the morals or, like, the ethics of, like, mostly white 20-year-old, like, millionaires.
Mm-hmm.
And that sometimes it feels like maybe there is no point in talking about, like, what athletes are doing. Although, again, like, somebody like Colin Kaepernick or JT Brown have created situations in which conversations were forced. And so a really amazing sort of example for athletes organizing and actually, like, pushing for change is happening at the University of Texas right now. So, the University of Texas has a massive football program, and the Longhorns, or, like, the members of the Longhorns team, which is the football team, have recently announced that they had a list of demands, which they posted online, and they said they, until the demands were met, they would no longer meet with recruits, which is obviously, like, new people to join the team. They would no longer attend fundraising events. They would no longer meet with alumni. So, especially... Yeah, so they said, like, they'll still show up for training. They'll still, like... They'll play the games, but they're not going to do any of the things that actually bring money to the university.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in the US, college football is, like, crazy because it brings in so much money, but the players are paid, like, nothing.
Yeah, and, like, as, like, a half American, I've been able to see how, like, completely crazy Americans are about their college football. Like, I go to South Carolina and everyone's like, did you see the Clemson game? Right?
No, like, college football is huge. It draws an insane amount of money for the universities and for the colleges. But in return, the players most of the time get, like, their tuition paid, but they can barely benefit from their degree because they're, like, training all the time, right? So... The college football program in itself is already kind of unethical. And especially when we're looking at football, if we're looking at college football in the US, you've got a majority of black players. And you've got a majority, or a large amount at least, of black players who are in a situation where the school is making so much money off of them, and in return they get next to nothing. Anyway, so these students said, okay, we're going to train, we'll play, we won't meet recruits, which is one of the big things, is that, like, one of the big pulls for the university and for investors into the university sports program is that they constantly recruit, like, star athletes. So the football team was like, we're not meeting with recruits, we're not meeting alumni, we're not going to fundraising events. And their list of demands was really good, because the University of Texas is steeped in Confederate history and, like, romanticizes... Yeah, so
that they could...
Yeah.
Yeah, like, there are a lot of demands that they could make.
So the demands are as follows. So, A, they wanted buildings to be renamed, which makes sense, including, like, a fountain that was named after, I think, Littlefield. They wanted statues replaced... And they wanted incoming students to have to take a module that would discuss the racist history, not only of Texas, but of the campus in particular. Because right now, there are still buildings named after Confederate, like, soldiers and generals. There are still statues of Confederate soldiers. And then they also wanted to alter the school's song, which is literally based on a minstrel show song. Minstrel shows, for those who don't know... were, like, basically blackface shows. It was, like, really racist characterizations of black people, romanticizing slavery, romanticizing the South, and these, like, very racist caricatures. Thank you. God, I can't speak. Caricatures of black people singing, like, songs that were more or less racist, usually mostly racist. Anyway, so they asked that they don't, that the song is replaced and that they don't have to stand for it anymore. And then they also asked for an outreach program, which is a huge demand for them to make, but I think honestly fair when the school is making so much money off their labor, including also an program where they would donate a portion of the income of the school to black organizations, including, like, Black Lives Matter chapters. And a more diverse Hall of Fame. Apparently they don't have a consistent black Hall of Fame. Like, they just have it for, like, Black History Month or something, which is, like, really fucked up. And then finally, to rename a portion of the stadium after the first black football player at the University of Texas, which was Julius Whittier. So this is a huge list of demands. And I was reading, I was reading an article by Mike Finger, and he was like, oh, some of these demands are, like, kind of out there. And I was like, none of these are really that out there. Like, asking for your school to rename buildings named after Confederate soldiers is not that big a request.
No, it's not.
And I think that they can put some really, like, decent pressure onto them. So I thought that this was a really good example for players organizing and using the power that they have as athletes and knowing that they draw all this money for their organization
That's awesome.
Make real change.
Yeah, I didn't know about that, but that's a really, really good example. I love that.
It's extremely cool. I'm very, excited to see where this goes. And I've seen that they've gotten quite a lot of support from other student athletes at UT. So I really hope that this, pushes a lot of change at the University of Texas. No person should go to a university that is constantly commemorating people who wanted them to be enslaved or treated them as less than. You know what I mean? That is deeply fucked up. And I think I think that specifically the part of the demands where they were like, oh, you need to tell new students your history is really good. I think that was really smart.
Yeah, and I will say, a lot of people who know me from Twitter are aware that, my dad is from South Carolina and, his entire family is from there. So I've had, I guess a bit of insight into how that works. My dad has said to me before that he didn't know that the Civil War had anything to do with slavery or was about slavery until he moved out of the South, right?
Yeah.
And I have seen over the years my friends and people in their community take down their Confederate flags and start to understand that maybe this celebration of the Civil War isn't what they thought it was, right? That war wasn't about what they thought it was, and that flag doesn't mean the same thing they think it does. So I think that, I understand that there is a bit of ignorance there, but there's also a lot of room for growth, and I have definitely seen, just from my outside perspective, going there, once every year or every 2 years, I've definitely seen kind of a shift in opinion there, and I think that it's possible to do that.
Mm.
If that makes sense.
No, I think that's really reasonable and really good. And I think that, there's definitely a lack of understanding of these things. And I think that it's a privilege to be ignorant. Obviously, the fact that so many of us just weren't aware of how terrible the situation was for a long time shows that, we were privileged and we were ignorant and we were sheltered. I think that that's why it's such an important and such a good demand to make that people are educated about the actual history of these people and of the campus and of where you're studying. I feel like that really changes your perspective, because I think a lot of the time people are like, oh my God, you just want people to apologize and feel bad. And that's not it. What you want is to create an environment in which people can learn and grow and do better. And we can't have those conversations without somebody taking responsibility. We can't have those conversations when we keep clapping each other on the back and being like, oh, you're doing so amazing. Oh, you didn't know better. You know what I mean? Yeah, oh, man. Definitely. I just thought about this. Did you see the video of Tony D'Angelo's dad?
Yes. Okay, if you haven't seen this video, it's been floating around Twitter. I, retweeted it, quote tweeted it at some point. But basically, so Tony D'Angelo, we've talked about him before. He is this Rangers player who has a history of using racial slurs and just saying pretty racist stuff and has been pretty vocal on Twitter. He also is starting a podcast where that's a not politically correct hockey podcast. I haven't listened to either.
Okay, here's the thing.
I don't care.
Yeah, I thought about listening to it in advance for this episode. I was like, maybe I should listen to it so you don't have to.
I just don't want to give him attention, you know?
And I feel like a lot of what they're going to say is probably really boring ass shit, and then
I heard a snippet and it was just hockey stuff.
But they're probably going to throw in some not so good stuff in between, and I don't I don't think it's productive to give them the downloads mm-hmm. to listen to their podcast.
Exactly.
For a couple of weeks just to get to that. But yeah. he notoriously was, like, suspended several times for using uh-huh. slurs, right?
Yeah. Basically, his dad did a whole video a while ago where he was like, well, you know, you can't blame the kid for using all of these words because I use them around the house every day. And, like, basically his whole angle was, like,
yeah.
you can't blame Tony D'Angelo for being raised in a racist environment. Well, he is literally the person who raised him.
I mean, he was,
created
like...
this racist environment.
Yeah, he was like, I was raised this way, so you can't blame me, so you also can't blame my son, which is, like... No, that's the whole problem. That's the whole
like,
problem.
You understand that your upbringing was problematic, and, like, you have the power to change that.
It's really hard. It's really hard for some people, and I honestly, it's hard for myself as well sometimes to be like, oh shit, I fucked up. Like, what I'm saying is, it's really hard sometimes. It can be weird. I'm not going to say hard, but it can be weird sometimes when somebody tells you, hey, this thing you've been doing is really fucked up or, like, really wrong or harmful. It can feel bad because I think a lot of the time you're not actively trying to hurt people. Although, when you're using a slur, I think you're actively trying to harm people.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But my point is there are, like, you know, sometimes people grow up with words and they don't really draw the conclusions. And then somebody's like, hey, that's a not cool thing to say. And then they're like, okay, bad. Mm-hmm. Then you have two choices. Either you feel that feeling and you're like, okay, I'm not going to do that again from now on. Or you feel that feeling and you go, fuck those people. mm-hmm. I'm going to continue to use slurs.
Yeah. And like, I'm sorry, you're not obligated to act the same way as your parents did. Like, that's not an excuse. And I have learned that a lot through my family, and I'm not trying to, like, say that my recent, you know, my close family is, like, amazing and we're the best people ever. Like, I'm not trying to kind of venerate them for doing the bare minimum, but I have extremely problematic family history. Like, look up Briggs versus Elliot. It was part of Brown versus Board of Education. My family was the Elliot side of that. Like, really, really problematic all throughout history. And my grandfather had the first desegregated waiting room of any doctor in South Carolina, right? Like, you can change. You don't have to be as awful as your parents are, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think that's a really... And I think that's a big thing right now with people, like, being like, I'm gonna disown my family. It's like, well, you can do that. Sometimes, you know, it's like, okay, your family sucks ass, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's important for us to have these, like, critical conversations and, like, you know, not, like, venerate our family, not romanticize mm-hmm. your past and your family history, and not say, oh, because my parents did it, it's okay. Mm-hmm. Like, I love my parents. My parents did an amazing job. And I think that they were, like, very good, and they're honestly, like, pretty, they're, like, very, like, liberal / left-leaning, but, mm-hmm. you know, I'm definitely, like, a little bit more, like, radicalized than my parents, and I think that's okay. Mm-hmm. I think that that's actually good. I think that it's good that I got a starting point, and from that starting point, decided to be, like, critical, and I hope that when I have children, my children will be like, yo, the way you think is backwards, and actually, this is something new, and I think that's a really cool thing. I think it's really important for generations to kind of inform each other that way as well, because it's true, the way that we grow up and the environments we grow up in do shape us, and sometimes we just don't think things through. Mm-hmm. Again, that's a privilege, but when we recognize that privilege, when we're put into a position where people actively tell us off for what you're doing, and then you choose to not consider that, you choose to not pick the right side in that situation. Yeah. And I think that for some people it may be, like, a little bit more complicated in some situations, or maybe they don't really understand, or there's, like, I think that for a lot of us, there can be more nuanced situations than that. But when somebody's like, don't use a slur, that's a slur. I feel like at this point you should be like, okay, I'm not going to use that slur, and I'm definitely not going to use that slur in front of my kids. And I'm not going to tell my kids that it's okay to use that slur. Mm-hmm. And that's, like, I think the biggest thing that we can glean from that is that Tony D'Angelo was brought up in a household where using a slur or doing something harmful is not your fault. It's not your fault. And that he's continued to carry that on. And I, God, like, you know how happy it would make me if one day I could put on my little mic, start my little podcast, and be like, Tony D'Angelo has seen the light.
Right?
But the Rangers are fucking enabling them. Like, there's no... His team is literally enabling him in being a dirtbag, so I don't know if that's gonna happen. I hope it does. I hope that for everyone. I mean, I hope that for, like, society as a whole, that we all start seeing, you know, like, things a little bit more clearly, but I don't know, dude. Tony D'Angelo's dad has bad vibes.
Yeah, definitely.
You know what else has bad vibes?
I think I know. What else? Is it a certain NHL owner?
Okay, so the Ottawa Senators had a charity called the Ottawa Senators Foundation. Don't know if you've heard about them. They have done some major fundraising for CHEO, for example, among other, like, Ottawa-based...
Haven't been doing enough, apparently, though, according to Mr. Eugene Melnick, who apparently wanted more control over them.
So here's the thing. They had a contract, and that contract is terminated, like, this month. Or, like, runs out this month. And they could have renewed the program with the contract with the team. And the team was like, I don't know. I don't know if they're using their funds. At least that's what they initially said. They were like, I don't know if they're using their funds very well. The Ottawa Senators Foundation was, from what I've seen, donating about 50% of the income that they were making was going directly to actual, like, charity work, right?
Yeah.
That's not ideal.
Also,
but it's not bad.
50-50 was counted as their income. Or no, 50-50, it was counted as expenses, right? Because they give away half of the money to somebody else. So that is, like, a thing that kind of skews it.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, it wasn't perfect.
But it's not...
Like, it could have been better.
Bad, especially when you're looking at a charity that has so much, like... I mean, they're obviously, like, marketing pretty hard. You're gonna have to pay people for that. And that's the nature of charities. Any charity... I mean, first of all, look up who you're donating to before you donate at any points, because you don't know how much of your money is actually going to these people.
Yeah.
But it's rich of Eugene to be like... Not enough money is going to them. Because then somebody was like, hey, remember the organ project? Remember Eugene's charity?
Because apparently, Eugene Melnick's charity, the organ project, was a charity that... Well, it was a charity that was supposed to raise awareness about organ donations.
Raising awareness in itself is, like, kind of shady. Because it's like, what does raising awareness mean?
Like, exactly. And I will say, like, I never saw anything about the Oregon Project outside of Sens games, and my mom has friends who work in, like, that field and had no idea that the Oregon Project existed. Or the Oregon Donation Project, I think. But yeah, it turns out that charity raised just under $1 million while it existed, and we don't know how much awareness it raised, because that can't exactly be quantified.
But it didn't raise that much money.
They only donated $5,000. $5,000 out of $1 million.
That's 0.5%, I think. I don't know math. I'm pretty sure that's 0.5%. That's 0.5%! That's less than 0.5%!
Anyways, yeah, so that was kind of embarrassing, and Sens Twitter actually decided to embarrass Melnick even further by raising, I think, four times that much. It was around $20,000 last time I checked for, I think it was the Trillium Foundation or something.
Yeah.
An organ donation foundation.
And thing. I know a bunch of people also signed up to be organ donors.
Yeah, for sure. So we also raised awareness on top of donating four times as much money as Eugene Melnick did in, like, I think it was 48 hours. We matched that $5,000 in about 2 hours.
Okay, I think that there is something truly shady about charities raising awareness. Sometimes all you can do is raise awareness, right? But most of the time, if you're donating to a charity that is raising awareness, you're just donating for the charity to do more events. I'm just saying, I don't think that... I don't think that that's necessarily good. I would rather donate somewhere where I know my money is being used.
Yeah, definitely.
But...
Or just like, man, the Sens could just have a link on their website to becoming an organ donor. And, like, promote that at games.
I mean,
and,
they
like,
did...
that would cost you nothing.
They did do that. They did, like, promote
being
an organ donor
like,
at games.
You could do just that. And that would be enough. You didn't even need to have an extra foundation for that, right?
Yeah, but Beata, taxes. Tax break.
Oh, man. Forgot about that.
I don't even want to... I feel like that might maybe possibly have something to do with it. I don't want to accuse them of that.
Do
I don't want
people do that. I don't think that's a thing.
Doesn't Malnick also technically like have his main residence in Barbados or some shit? Like somewhat.
He just likes Barbados, Poppy.
Okay, everybody likes Barbados. I get it, but it has the vibe of something that rhymes with tax ishmazen. You know, just...
I don't know. Melnick has proven to be such a nice guy. Such good morals.
It's true.
Aren't rich people all super nice and clear about their taxes?
Yeah, I mean, Eugene just has, like, a generally bad history. Like, bad vibes all around. Pretty bad. NHL owners are mostly pretty evil, so, you know.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah. Not only did that happen, but... as soon as this article came out in the Ottawa Sun, Melnick just basically started attacking the journalists. And, like, you know, he didn't outright threaten legal action, but it was, like, kind of implied. And basically just, like, nitpicking little details that didn't have that much to do with the actual contents of the article and, like, the accusations that were being made.
Okay, I actually want to... I want to read this, because The Sun published... okay, so... The Sun published a correction and apology afterwards, and my favorite thing about this is that the Ottawa Senators tweeted a picture of the newspaper. Like, they didn't scan it. They, like, took a picture with Flash on...
It was a picture that somebody else had taken and put on Twitter. Like, it wasn't their picture.
Oh, no. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's really funny. Okay, but
they
here's,
just put a
like...
filter over it.
Here is a part that I thought was really funny. So, the June 8th column... This is the correction and apology that was published in the Ottawa Sun. The June 8th column referred to information in a Canada Revenue Agency filing that indicated the Organ Project, a private foundation started by Eugene Melnick, donated $5,000 to the Kidney Foundation in 2018. However, the Organ Project has told The Sun that its core mandate was not to distribute money to other charities, but to spend money it raised on activities aimed at promoting organ awareness and registration. So they raised money so that they could spend money? So that they could spend money on what? I'm assuming their contract with the Senators, probably? So Eugene's foundation raised money so that his foundation could do promotion, which they did through the Ottawa Senators. So I'm assuming they paid the Ottawa Senators to do promotion, which is Eugene's fucking team. Like, I've never seen the Organ Project do any other promotion except for with the Ottawa Senators.
Exactly. We needed to raise a lot of money so that Eugene Melnick could pay himself.
It's like if I said to you, oh my god, Beata, I need money so that I can raise awareness for dope barbecues. And you were like, oh my god, okay, I'm gonna send you this money. if everybody was like, okay, we're going to send Poppy this money and she's going to raise awareness for dope barbecues. And everybody was like, oh, I'm sure this money is going to go towards several dope barbecues around the city. And instead, I used all that money to throw a party in my backyard and was like, look at this dope barbecue. You know what?
Not even in your backyard, in my backyard. You came over to my house. You were like, I'm going to pay you for the
and
use
then,
of your grill.
When I had my dope barbecue party, I also charged people to attend my dope barbecue party. It's so incredible. I have to point out here that I am not educated in the nuances of how charitable organizations work, clearly. But this is what it reads like. I want somebody with more of a good accounting brain to look into this for me, please. Because if you have a good accounting brain and you know what's going on, email us. thesamalnikanlife@gmail.com. I would love to know. Anyway, that was really funny to me, the fact that they were like, yes, okay, so we only donated $5,000, but that's because we weren't supposed to donate anyway. Your money was supposed to go to us making videos. Ugh. Hate that shit. This is why you can't trust contrast awareness shit. Don't trust it. Okay. I'm done roasting Eugene for this.
Okay. Anyways, we have come to the end of this podcast, and now it is time to award Big Rig Energy.
Mm-hmm. Big Rig Energy of the week goes to JT Brown.
Obviously.
Duh, we've talked about him a lot today. Cool dude, very politically active. Not only invested a lot of money into bailing out protesters right now, but also actually has marched in Minnesota and has mm-hmm. been joining protests and has also been trying to raise awareness for racial inequality for a really long time. So props to JT Brown. He's cool.
Mm-hmm. He's amazing.
And I hope we continue to see more of him. And I hope that the NHL isn't going to be a jerk to him once all of this blows over.
Yeah, let's hope.
So on that note, because the NHL is evil and it's making my brain hurt, thank you for listening to The Samalnikan Life. I'm sorry, The Samalnikan Life is such a funny title right now, specifically after roasting Eugene. I also want to briefly make a quick plug. Which is that the title This Samalnikan Life was invented by a dear friend, Mike Wheeler, mm-hmm. and Mike and his wife, Leah Day, who I love very much, have started a podcast called Baby Quest, which yes. is really amazing, and they're talking about not just sort of the complications and the weird, windy, long road to trying to get pregnant, but they've also very honestly and very kindly shared their experience with child loss. So mm-hmm. I think anybody who's interested in, I guess, birth in general, but also like sort of like fertility in, mm-hmm. I think if you're somebody who's interested in kind of like health and mm-hmm. the healthcare system, this can be really insightful. So thanks, Mike, for the title, and also listen mm-hmm. to Baby Quest.
We love you, Mike.
We do. And Leah.
And Leah.
Obviously. okay. Thank you for listening to The Samalnikan Life. You can find us on Twitter. I'm at CoolCatMum, mum with a U.
And I am CBeataE, so CBeataE.
Or you can email us at thesamalnikanlife.com. And the music this week was Pearls and Champagne by Instaligen. It is my own band. I'm plugging us. You can't do anything about it, except if you are a musician and you would like to hear your music on this show, please email us at thesamalnikanlife@gmail.com or DM me on Twitter and we'll make it happen. Anyway, you can find Instaligen, again, my cool band, on Spotify, on Apple Music, and at instaligion.bandcamp.com. That's InstaligiOn.
Our logo is by Lena Novi and Angus Fitzgerald Clark. For bonus content, please find us at patreon.com/thisismelnickinlife. You can subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts, and of course, you can rate us and review us on iTunes.
Cool. I think we're done.
Yeah. Bye.
Right, bye.
Rising.